Hello, today's show has some strong language. Strong language for a strong game. Sincerely, Professor Stephen Hawking.
This week in your parents' basement, we're putting on our loincloth and armor to throw daggers at attacking wizards, dragons, and zombies, but oddly enough, no tigers. From 1987, we're playing the classic beat-em-up arcade game with RPG elements, Black Tiger. I'm Steve Greenwell, and with me today is my regular co-host, Todd Brisket.
Welcome to Dungeon.
And our other regular co-host, buying potions from strange old men, is Huell Hauser.
Thank you. I am in debt to you.
Also lubing up his morning star today is our second time guest, Pascal's Pager, also known as Paul.
Please accept more time.
Paul is one of the co-hosts of AfterPod, which is a daily podcast covering other podcasts like The Adam Carolla Show and eventually Serial Season 2. You can find more info on it at www.afterpod.net. As always, you can reach us by email, parentsbasementpodcast@gmail.com. Write in and get your thoughts right on the show. You can also retweet us on the Twitters or like us on Facebook. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes and be sure to give us some stars. And finally, you can also support the show by purchasing goods on Amazon. For the click-through link and other tidbits, visit our website, www.yppodcast.com. Today's game is Black Tiger from 1987. In 1987, I was about a wee little boy of 3 years old. I was a sweet little baby boy. And so
sweet
was you.
Sweet baby boy.
Oh.
And so was the little baby brisket. But
little who was a man
playing man's games? Paul. Pascal's Pager. he was slaying them dragons, them zombies, them wizards in the arcade. Black Tiger was a side-scroller with gold called Zennies that you could use to purchase weapons, disposable armor, keys, and potions. Paul, you nominated this game for the show this week many, many times. why don't you start off the discussion for us properly?
Okay, well, this is clearly the great video game of all time. I think I've mentioned this a number of times in a number of forums. But for me, for a young Pascal, This was it. There were a lot of games, guys. There was Kung Fu Master. There was Super Mario Brothers. There was Space Harrier. There were a lot of games, but there was
this,
one.
This was your Final Fantasy VI.
Right. That's right.
This was absolutely your Shaq Fu.
It was the ultimate. It was even better. I have to say, I really, really, really enjoyed your episode on Tecmo Bowl. That was a great episode.
Oh, I thank
and,
you.
This one, and it brought back many memories. But this one ranks even higher. So yes, Black Tiger was the game for a young Pascal at the age of 13, 14.
No, I think now, the burning question is why?
Is it the half naked man on the screen?
Okay, well,
it's my only question.
I'm going to try to answer in a way that's not condescending.
Trying not to be condescending, but I would love to see how you will not be.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, a little context. Number one, I'll give you 3 points of context. Number one, this holds the distinct of being the only video game that I ever defeated in the arcade. So I got pretty close with Super Mario Brothers. I got pretty close with a few others, but this was the one that I pumped quarter after quarter after quarter into. Number two, you know, it was right. I gather that you guys are a bit younger than I am, but when I was in my teens, the whole Conan the Barbarian and the Beast Beastmaster and Deathstalker and Dragon Slayer, all of these things were really, really big at the time. And so this game really tapped into that. I mean, it put you right in the middle of that sort of action. And there weren't a lot of games that did that with the fantasy motif. And number three, this is super specific, so forgive me, but I think I've mentioned this possibly on this show before, but when I was younger, my dad owned a video arcade, and here's the way it worked. So he owned the arcade, and another guy owned all the video games, a guy from the next city over who had a big family fun center. He owned all the video games, and so what he did was he loaned us all the video games, and then he and my dad would split the quarters. They would split profits between the two. However, there were these special quarters that were painted with fingernail polish. They were red quarters. And those were the quarters that were given out to people who had a refund coming to them. You know, they stuck something into a machine and it didn't work or whatever. Uh-huh. Those quarters all came back to Dad. They were taken off the top before the split was made. And you better believe that I had myself pockets and pockets full of red quarters when I was 13 and 14 years old. And for whatever reason, Black Tiger just seemed to be a highly malfunctioning video game at the time. That cabinet was not working properly, and lots of red quarters were pumped into that game. So,
oh, coincidence.
Now, did you sell ice cream at your arcade, or?
We didn't sell ice cream, but I worked behind the counter and I sold a bucket load of horrible nachos and hot dogs and frozen pizzas that were, you know, divided up into eighths.
Sounds
and sold
very
for
familiar.
$4. Yeah, that's right.
Microwave cheeseburgers, perhaps.
Yes. Totally.
Yeah,
you guys are living in a wonderland of food.
Yeah, I didn't realize we had two professionals of the arcade industry on this show.
You can say that.
Did you guys ever open the internals and flip the little switch that said it turned it into a free game?
No, because we had a token system, so we just had thousands of tokens. We could just take handfuls of at any time.
Oh, so lucky. We only did that before the place opened. So there was a period of about a month there. We had a bunch of machines in the building before the doors officially opened, and got to play a bunch of video games.
Endless tokens.
I envy you. For some reason, I'm suddenly remembering playing 1941. I haven't thought of that in like 20 years, but I played 1941 like 100,000 times.
Weird.
For this game, wow, I can't believe that you actually beat this legit, because that sounds very expensive. I probably pumped well more than $10-$20 worth of fake quarters into this game
I don't depends how legit we're talking here.
Yeah. The first time I played this, so I made some videos of this on my old Twitch and YouTube pages of me struggling with this game.
Yes.
I put in, on that first run, I put in about $10 worth of quarters.
Right.
And those were
1987 dollars.
Yeah, that was 1987 dollars. And then I think it was Steve mentioned, just upgrade your weapon. Don't upgrade your armor.
Yes.
And yep. So I spent all my money on the weapons on the second run, and that one I got to about stage five on about six quarters.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's not so bad.
I think you mean round five, but we all know what you mean.
Board five. However, it's a colloquialism based. You know, we call them levels or stages.
Right. Right. Right.
That's what they call them in the biz.
Yeah, that is. I mean, you've tapped right into the secret there, especially when you're playing on I'm playing on Nintendo on the Wii on the virtual arcade, but yeah, uh-huh. that's the ticket, is to play. Don't ever buy armor if you have unlimited continues. Always buy weapons. Always buy weapons and vitalities.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the cheap thing about it. Like, if you buy the weapon and you die, you keep the weapon. If you buy the armor and you die, you lose the armor.
Right.
Yeah, that was continually frustrating to me. Because I didn't realize that at first through, you know, the first couple stages. I don't necessarily understand why that's the case. I imagine it's because, oh, they want you to pump more quarters in. That's probably the real reason. But, like, it seems odd that the weapon carries over from death to death, but the armor does not. Because everything else also, like, you keep your keys and your potions. Yeah.
I still couldn't figure out what the potions do, but yeah, you keep them.
I don't know what the keys did.
Keys are for those treasure chests on the ground.
Oh, really?
Yeah. For the most part, the game is pretty okay with like ferreting out the keys. Like, I normally didn't have to buy them. I normally had enough to just open
the treasure chest. Yeah, I never ran out of keys.
That's why I didn't know what they did.
Yeah. The potions, some of the wizards in the later stages, if you get hit with their flame, it confuses you or poisons you. And the potions prevent that.
When you turn purple?
Yeah, the issue is, though, that, you know, if anything hits you in this game, you're normally dead anyway. So, because there's no stun protection, where, like, most modern games, if you get hit, you are invulnerable for like 1 to 3 seconds, so that you can kind of get yourself out of trouble. In Black Tiger, you are not. They can just hit you with a magic spell, and if you happen to fall backwards into another enemy, oh well, you're dead, because it counts as as 2 hits instead of 1.
There was a lot of that happening for me.
You know what? The other thing that the potions do that is super helpful is when you get eaten by those Audrey 2s that pop up out of the ground, they take away your knives, so all you have is the mace or whatever you're throwing. But if you have a potion, you can get eaten by an Audrey 2, and it won't take away your knives.
And it makes the most horrifying sound.
Right.
It's like bone crunching.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Speaking of those plants and every other enemy, there's just tons of enemies in this game, and they are all pretty nasty. Like, this is...
Yeah.
This game isn't quite as bad as... Super Goals and Ghost, which is
right.
That's kind of the benchmark for really tough side-scrolling game to me. Side-scrolling beat 'em up, but it's close.
It reminded me a lot of it.
Yeah. Ghosts and Goblins and Ghouls and Ghosts.
Yeah, even to the point where I believe both games are made by Capcom. You see the Red Gargoyle in both games, the predecessor to. I think it's Brisket. You might actually know his Japanese name. I think it's like Red Ariyama or something.
Red Arimer.
Yep.
Actually, you know, speaking of him, there's only two named characters in this game. There's Red Arimer and Black Tiger. Everybody else is just a generic. It's just dragon or bat or rock.
Or like Fire Mummy. Well, what was that dude's name?
Annoying.
Yeah, the worst.
So that this brings is, up, yeah. I mean, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that my biggest issue with this game is, I mean, it's a fine and dandy game and everything. I love upgrading my armor and weapons and stuff and collecting those zennies. This is an RPG. This is your role playing. So my issue with this game is the controls are so slow. If there's a bad guy that pops out, or a bat flying around, I cannot jump or run around it. I can't get by him. He just runs right into me.
It is pretty slow.
Your barbarian is so slow.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things. This isn't what I was going to say, but jumping forward in my notes, there's a few things. I mean, this game does rely kind of on shots. So particularly like the falling boulders and the spitting walls, these are things that until you've played through the game a bunch of times, you can't really know. I mean, and that's not really fair for a rock to just fall on your head and it kills you instantly. It doesn't matter how much armor you've got, whatever you're wearing, it just kills you.
This is my second my second run was so smooth is because I actually was aware that, oh, this rock is going to fall as soon as I jump on this platform. I have to jump back and avoid it.
Right, right.
And, or there's Audrey 2 up on this platform. And I can't just right. jump and run across it.
Yeah,
I have to wait for his head to pop out and so I can murder it.
Yeah, usually in games like this, the most dangerous thing is not a falling rock. Like right. it's normally like a dragon. It's not a stone falling.
Especially when they tempt you with a time pickup right there, and you're like, "Oh, I'll just go pick this up," and then you're dead because a rock fell on you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, oh, everything's doing great. I'm gonna go pick this up, and I'm dead.
Well, one of the things, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be the. I could talk about this game for a long time, so I don't. You know, please stop me if I'm talking.
No, please
anybody.
Do because I
but I made a note. So I was playing through again today. I played through a couple times the other day, and then this morning I had a few hours, and so I played through a couple times. And I was trying to make notes. Like, why do I love this game so much? And part of it, there's no question, is just nostalgia. I mean, this game hit me right at the right time. I was the right age. I was into fantasy. I was into sword and sorcery and all these things. This game, and I don't know if you guys ever encountered this because it's not on the Wii Virtual Arcade, but there was a game called Rastan that competed a lot for my quarters at this same time. And it was a very similar sort of sword and sorcery game, played a barbarian dude that would fight lizard people. But I kind of made a list of things that I like about this game. And number one, stop me if I'm reaching here, but number one, one of the things I love about this game is there's no bullshit at all. Like, this game just – I feel like when you start a lot of games, like a lot of modern games, I feel like I'm waiting a lot of time. I'm watching all this story and doing all these things. And then, like, Mario has the whole kind of backstory thing. And this game, there is literally nothing. It's like there are three dragons.
Yeah.
The kingdom is in darkness. There's one brave fighter. Go. That's it. There's no BS. You don't have to wade through anything. Who are all these guys that are turned into stone? They look exactly like each other. Doesn't matter. It's none of your business. Just jump on top of them, set them free, keep going. You don't need to know. It's not up to you. And I like that. I like that about the game. The other thing I like about it is that it hits the sweet spot in terms of it gets. You know, like especially in the later levels, once you get past level, or I should say round three or round four, it starts to get really hard. Like, things get really crazy and chaotic, but it's not too hard. It's not so hard that you can't do it, but it's so hard that it can be frustrating. You have to sort of keep starting the round over. I like that. I like the discovery angle. You know, it's kind of got that Mario thing with the hidden levels and all that stuff where you can just find things in the walls and get special treasures and that sort of thing.
You can enter the dungeon or whatever. What's the
match? Yes,
you can be welcome to dungeon.
You can welcome to dungeon. Yeah, which kind of actually, that's another note I made. There are a couple weird choices in this game, weird design choices. One of which is the flashing neon dungeon signs.
That is yes. It reminded me of Beetlejuice when he's in the model.
it's
the model city, and it's like so out of place that he has like that huge strip club with the neon signs.
Yeah.
It's like, why is this here? It's in this rock cave. Like,
yeah. And also, by the way, when the dungeon little areas that you go through, there's not really a great reward for going through any of them. Like,
it's like a couple of dirty old men.
And more Zenny bucks.
Yeah, more Zennies.
Yeah, you get lots of dollars in those
dollar bills.
Yeah, millions of dollars.
The other weird choice in this game was the ninjas. That it seemed a little out of place when you start seeing the ninjas. I don't know if that's just because it was the 80s and you had to have ninjas and everything if you were going to be okay.
What ninjas are you talking about? I can't recall what these ninjas are.
I think they show up. Round like five, maybe.
Okay, maybe I didn't get to him. I got stuck on the Mannequin boss with the two swords. So if they show up after that one, I didn't see him.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. They're well after that.
Yeah, the ninjas are probably the hardest regular enemy that you face.
Yeah.
Because they bounce around the screen, they disappear and reappear, and they also take a bunch of hits. Actually, the only thing I found tougher was the they're like mummies who I don't know if they shoot their tongue out at you or
they spit fire.
Okay, that's meant to be fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why mummies would be spitting fire at you or using their tongue, so neither one really made sense to me.
None of your business. Doesn't matter. you got to kill them. That's it.
Clearly.
You could explain a lot about this game with that phrase.
Yeah. And also, by the way, they're like you have to recover all these men who have been turned to stone. There's nothing in the game that turns you to stone. It's not like you kill a Medusa at some point or a Gorgon. Like everything, like there's nothing that turns you to stone in this game. So I don't know how they all got turned to stone.
None of your business.
That's exactly right. Let's go
back and talk about this a little bit because I think I think I know why this barbarian is doing all this stuff and why these old men are here. If we go back to the story. Let me send you guys a link real quick.
Uh-huh.
It's just a screenshot of the story so we can read along. Here's what the intro says. It says, long, long ago, three dragons descended from skies above with a rolling thunder and destroyed a kingdom into darkness. That's obviously when the entire population of bald old men in purple shirts were turned into stone.
Mm-hmm. Specifically them, yes.
Yeah. From lengthy suffering and darkness of the kingdom came one brave fighter. So why did this guy not get turned to stone? And why is he the one to save the entire population of bald old men in purple shirts? I can only assume that this is his fetish. Because if I were in his position, I'd be like, screw it, man. I don't care about these bald old men that are statues. That's the entire population of this kingdom is bald old men in purple shirts.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
True.
Well, so if you take a look at the other screenshots in that album there, that barbarian is very flamboyant and kinky.
Easy.
Well, Brisket, now I can tell that you never got to the end of this game because at the end of this game, you know, you get a lady.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, you do.
Whoa.
Yeah,
you I gotta.
Do. Oh, yeah.
It all makes sense now. It all makes sense.
Lady wearing a turban.
Oh, no. No, never mind.
Speaking of turbans, this game is a very deep and powerful allegory for the ISIS situation. In Afghanistan and in Syria, and their war on the infidels. All they do is they go around destroying historic sites and urns. They break all the historic urns in Syrian temples, and they're just doing it to get they call them dragons, but they're really referring to the American infidels. Get them out of their country.
Hmm.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I see.
Yes. Yeah. That would seem very prophetic of a game from 1987 to be about.
You know, I don't bother with timelines or anything like that. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you have mentioned before that you only like to play games with present day political value. So
that's true. Which is why I love Tetris.
Yeah.
End twin.
Yeah.
You know, you brought up the ending. The ending, I have to say, of this game, particularly if you've pumped about $315 into the machine, is a little bit anticlimactic. You didn't see that coming?
Yeah, from all the deep storytelling it's been giving so far when you've been playing through it.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know. I guess I was hoping for – I mean, it's satisfying. It is satisfying in context of the rest of the game. But I don't know. I was hoping for somebody to come out and give me a hand job or something. I don't know. Like, I felt like I put so much into this game. Then it was like, hey, congrats. And here's your credits.
Well, this is, you know, back in the day when this was out, like, most of the ending screens weren't anything special, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I mean, except for, I think Ninja Gaiden was the first game that I can really remember that had really good, you know, kind of story scenes between levels and that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, right. It had actual cutscenes with, like, animation.
Holy crap, it's funny that you bring that up, because I downloaded that game on the Nintendo, I don't know, a month ago or something, and I had such great memories of that game. I played it like 4 or 5 times. So I was like, holy crap, this game is hard. It's hard. I can't get past the first level of Ninja Gaiden.
Oh, yeah, no, the original Ninja Gaiden and even the sequels, they are legendarily Nintendo hard.
Yeah.
To use the term from TV Tropes for it. And also, Ninja Gaiden, it's not like the super buff enemies that kill you. It's the goddamn birds. Like, there are so many bird enemies in early Nintendo games and early arcade games. Bird enemies are pretty much the worst.
Mm-hmm.
They just, since they fly all over the screen and they're small and they're impossible to hit. Now, I will say one thing that makes Black Tiger a little bit easier than some of the later Nintendo games is the fact that once you kill an enemy, it does stay dead. Like, it vanishes off the screen and you don't have to worry about it.
That's mm-hmm. true.
Yeah. That's good. Once,
yeah. If you die and come back, the ones you dead, the ones you deaded, I almost said, once you kill, are gone. So you
yeah.
breathe a little bit.
The only thing that
your only release is sweet death.
The only ones that that revive appropriately are the zombies. The zombies are inexhaustible, but they
I did not like them.
No, but they're also somewhat easy to avoid. I mean, there are some that actually do throw their heads at you as projectiles.
Well, that's so awesome. That could not be more awesome.
If it was just them, I'd be fine. But it's when they are popping up while you're fighting one of, like, the shield guys or a fire mummy or something, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, I would need to deal with this much stronger me, but I'm being surrounded by annoying skeletons.
Well,
you know what they're great for?
Dang skelly bones. Tossing their heads around and jumping around.
They're like those dudes in Labyrinth that throw their heads back and forth. That, you know what they're great for, is there have been times when I have been not paying attention and I've overspent my Z coins, and you can run back through the levels and find a spot where all the zombies pop up and just kill the crap out of hundreds of them and get a bunch of coins if you need a weapon, you know, because I've found that you need to, that there's very specific sort of correlation between the weapon that you have and the boss that you have to beat. And if you have messed it up, then you're in trouble. I mean, it's really, really, really hard to beat a boss if you don't have the appropriate weapon.
Yes, I have experienced that.
Yeah, Brisket.
I got stuck on the level 3 dragon, and I had to hit him. I had to hit him 50 times to take off one bar.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And that's
funny, because you warned me about that earlier. I heard you complaining about it, and then once I got to it, I did the first try, and I'm like, what was the big deal? Because I had the bigger weapon.
Yeah, the size of your whip really does matter quite a bit in this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not the motion at all.
And there is also, like, the game doesn't make it always clear with the bosses that not all of your hits are doing damage. You have to pay attention to the fact that, you know, if there's like a blue tinge to your hit, that isn't registering damage. It's
right.
The some of them you got to hit in the face to damage them, to rough them up.
Mm-hmm. And also, so three points to make about the bosses.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, And you guys probably figured this out. It's pretty obvious. But you have an opportunity, if you don't get too close, you have an opportunity to do some damage, I think all the way up to a single bar on each enemy, on each boss, before they will wake up, mm-hmm. as long as you get too close.
Yeah, so, I have seen that happen.
Yeah, you can kind of creep up to them and hit them, mm-hmm. and then they'll start chasing after you.
Yep. And then the other, I don't know if this is a cheat. It feels like a cheat, but I mean, it's part of the game, so I don't know. But I don't know if you noticed, if you kneel down, they can hurt you. So when the bosses are approaching you, if you kneel down, they will walk right on top of you. It does no damage at all. And you can
figure that out.
You can kneel down, and then all you have to do is essentially is avoid whatever they're throwing. So most of them will throw fire, you know, fireballs or whatever. As long as you avoid those, then you can kneel down. They can walk on top of you. They can swing their swords, whatever it is.
So they just walk right through you. Sword guy will just walk right through you if you're kneeling down.
Yep. Same with the dragons as well.
Oh, I did not notice that at all.
Yep.
So speaking of that, I read on the wiki about the Japanese version called Black Dragon, not Black Tiger, Black Dragon. In that one, you are a dragon where you fight flying tigers. Anyway, in the Japanese version, the difference between that one and the American version is when you fight the later bosses in stage 5 through 7, you cannot, if you duck, they still hit you.
Oh,
so they fixed it. They didn't allow Paul's cheapo way.
Yeah.
His immoral way.
That sounds like Eastern witchcraft.
I think they changed a few other small things, which I think they made some of the enemies stronger. It takes more hits to kill them. And, but I think they also increased the coin amount they dropped.
I did notice when I was fighting the final boss, he actually got trapped in a pattern that allowed me to beat the game. I jumped up on the right. There are some rocks over there. And he just got stuck throwing fireballs that missed me. And I just whipped him. I whipped him good. Whipped him down from four bars to none in the blink of an eye. And that's how I beat the game.
Literally 25 years of playing this game, I've never done that. I've never experienced that. That's amazing.
Well, it's a proud day for my family. I let them all know that I had saved the kingdom from the evil dragons. So
you had that turban headed girl in your mirror there. You were going after it.
she was sitting on my lap. Yeah.
So you guys answer for me. You all have a greater depth and breadth of video game knowledge for me. But one thing I've interesting about this game. Oh, okay. I'm thinking for a minute to make sure I don't just make an idiot out of myself. But okay, as far as I know, or at least in my experience, one thing that makes this game unique is that bosses from the earlier levels become general enemies in the later levels, right? So you beat the stone heads as the boss in level 1 and level 2, but they become like they start popping out of pots and stuff in the later levels. And with the red who comes out and starts, you know, throwing his arrows and stuff. Is that a common thing in video games? Because I don't think I've experienced that before.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I pulled up a page here on TVTropes.org. And that is called the degraded boss. Some examples: we have Zelda, some Dodongos, some Manhandlers, some Dig Doggers and Gomas. We have a lot of Zeldas in there.
Now you're just making up words.
Devil May Cry does this. Ninja Gaiden, a little game called Ninja Gaiden on NES.
If I may, Todd, a game we covered, X-Men, the arcade game, does this as well.
X-Men? Yeah. Streets of Rage? Seems like it's a lot of beat-em-ups do this. Yeah.
It's more of an arcade trope, I think. Yeah, like arcade stand-up games.
Yeah, they got to get them quarters out of you. They got to get them nail polish quarters.
That's a lot.
I think this is actually this is probably quite common because not to poo-poo all over your point, but this is an easy way to get a lot more use out of the assets you create for the game. So you can instead of modeling or drawing out a different enemy, you can just reuse one and recolor it.
Right.
Palette swap it.
Yeah, palette swap
makes
it.
Sense.
Mm-hmm. Before I forget, speaking of the history of this game and where it is now, ports for Black Tiger were released for the Amstrad, whatever that is, the Amiga, the Atari ST, and the ZX Spectrum in 1989, and the Commodore 64 in 1990. However, it skipped the NES as well as the 16 and 32-bit consoles. It was developed by Capcom, which did similar beat-em-ups instead, like The King of Dragons, Knights of the Round, and two Dungeons & Dragons games that are kind of similar, Tower of Doom and Shadow over Mystara.
Mm-hmm. That's two things to say about that. The first one is I looked up videos of all the ports that this game has been on, which is all the Amigas and the ZX Spectrums, and they all look horrendous compared to the arcade. Like, it's so much more sluggish and slow compared to the arcade. That's one thing. The other thing is, playing this game, all it made me want to do is boot up the other games by Capcom, like Knights of the Round and the Dungeons and Dragons games.
Mm-hmm. I had King of the Dragons as a kid for Super Nintendo, and it was a pretty splendid game. It's much more beat 'em up than this one is, which is kind of I feel like this one kind of has a little bit more RPG elements. Whereas King of the Dragons, you basically just you gain life and levels as you beat enemies. Like, you gain experience, but you don't have to worry about managing your money and that kind of thing. I think the Dungeons & Dragons games, they don't have money either, but they do have branching stage paths, and they have, like, special moves and that kind of thing. Oh, and they also have character classes.
And they have it has good gameplay. That's the main point.
There is no direct sequel to Black Tiger, but the game has been re-released several times. The Capcom Classics Collection 2 for the PlayStation 2. It came out in 2006, and it has Black Tiger in 19 other games. It also came out for the Wii's Virtual Console in 2011, and it is a freebie inclusion on the Capcom Arcade Cabinet, which is a collection of old Capcom games for the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360. I actually inadvertently played this game, I think, 2 or 3 years ago, because I downloaded the old Capcom Arcade Cabinet, and it's one of the freebie games, along with you can play like the first level or two of 1941. So it's a lot of fun for about 10 minutes, and then I went back to playing modern games.
So on the list, along the lines of re-releases and whatnot, there was in 1990 another Capcom arcade game that is a spiritual successor to this called Magic Sword. That one is you're a barbarian dude running through castles, chopping dudes. But you get when you open a locked jail cell, you get a sidekick, and there's many different sidekicks. You can get a ninja, or a pirate, or like a wizard, or like a rogue lady.
Yeah, it's weird. This is Capcom does kind of have a reputation for just putting new numbers on games or just running out. Like, how many versions of Street Fighter 2 are there? There's like 6 of them. And there's also like 10 Mega Man games. But for most of their other games, they would just, you know, they had spiritual successors, like tons and tons of them for their beat 'em ups. So good for them, I guess.
Yeah. I liked, again, you know, my knowledge is limited, but when I look at this game and I look at sort of other games that were contemporary to this, I feel like the, I don't know what the word is. It's not really the graphics, because all the graphics are kind of limited by the chips or whatever. But I feel like the art was really good in this game. There's a lot of really cool 3D effects and way the levels are designed. Yeah.
I did make that note that the colors in this game really pop. It does have a lot of nice little artwork. For it being a 1987 game, it's very stylistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It does have a very, I don't know, minimalist is not the right word. It feels a little barren, but in a good way. Like, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of these games are kind of going for the Conan the Barbarian sort of vibe. I think this one definitely kind of hits that art style better than some other games that are of that era.
Mm-hmm.
It clearly hits that, that barbarians kind of feel better.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And when you look back, I was a super, you know, I was a little fantasy nerd. And back in the day, of all the video games that were out there and that were huge, you know, the games, at least that I recall, were your games like Double Dragon and Contra and Kung Fu Master and games like this, which were fighting games and they were fun and they were cool, but there were very, very few, oddly enough, that hit on that kind of fantasy sword and sorcery thing. I think there was what was the game that was kind of like a three-quarter view looking down, walking through a castle? It was like an RPG. Crap, I can't think of the name of it, but it was
Tower popular.
There were
something.
Several sequels. No, I want to say it was like, it was Gauntlet. Gauntlet.
Oh,
Gauntlet.
Yeah.
So there was that one, and there was this one, and there was Rastan. And I think that was pretty much it, which is surprising. I mean, you would think there would be more, but this one just really it appealed to that little nerd in me that wanted to be the guy in the loincloth and carrying the sword.
Gauntlet did come out, it looks like, about 2 years before this one. Gauntlet is definitely a different kind of game, though. That's more of a dungeon crawl sort of thing. Like Gauntlet, to me, it's eventual surpassers, like a game like Diablo, like one of those kind of things. Whereas this is definitely more of a traditional side-scrolling beat-em-up kind of thing. The fact that it did have the money and the RPG elements did make it different than the other stuff. You mentioned Rastan, however you say it.
Yeah, right.
That looks to be like one of the few games that kind of was the same thing around at the same time. Other games in the arcade in 1987 would have been Contra, the first Street Fighter, Operation Wolf, which I've mentioned before on the show, which was a light gun game. And according to Wikipedia, other games were called Dragon Spirit, Blazer, Quester, Pac-Mania,
what?
Galaga 88, and Final Lap. So this is kind of in that weird between zone before you get some of the bigger arcade games coming out, like this is way before NBA Jam, and it's before X-Men the arcade game, like kind of games I remember from my childhood.
Yeah. Boy, who can forget those lost weekends playing Blazer and Final Lap over and over?
I can't tell if you're being serious or not.
I'm not.
What is Blazer? Blazer is an isometric perspective scrolling shooter arcade game that was released by Namco in 1987 only in Japan. So it probably caused a yen shortage. And
you guys didn't fly over to Japan to video game it up for a weekend?
No, not when I was three. Pac-Mania basically looks like isometric. It's kind of that fake 3D-ish kind of view.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one came out on NES, and I played it on that one a lot. That was a big rental for me.
Ugh, you kids in your NES. I definitely think, but the reason why I probably had never heard of Black Tiger though is the fact that it completely skipped over the NES, and you know there wasn't a Super Nintendo or Sega version.
Right.
So
and by the time I would be coherent enough to want to play this kind of game, I'd be playing Knights of the Round or the Dungeons and Dragon game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely kind of a game that skipped a generation. It seems like it's just for you and your cool teenagers at the time, Pascal's Pager. Brisket, did you have any more notes about this fine game?
Did you guys know the more you play, more exciting it gets?
I knew that. I totally knew that.
I did not find that to be true.
Huel, how far did you get in this game? I think Brisket said he got to level 5 or level 6 roughly. Did you try to hang through more of it than that, or
I was like mid level 5, I think.
That was also I played this on Monday. And like I got to level 5 or 6 and then I just had to stop for a bit cuz I was at one point I got killed by like there were 6 or 7 enemies on the screen at one time and they all freaking killed me. So I had to take a little break. I had to have a little me time. And then I came back to it and beat it. Except for there is a jump in stage 7 that is
I know what you're talking about.
I had to look up on YouTube how to beat it. You apparently have to hold up while you're making this jump. Otherwise it is impossible. And also even holding up, it doesn't, physically it does not look like you're able to make this jump. That took me just 10 minutes wandering around trying to find a fix.
I mean, in your defense, I know it precisely which jump you're talking about. And back when I was playing this in the arcade, I gave up for a while after, I mean, I got to the point where I hit that level and I honestly thought the game was broken. I thought there was some kind of error in programming. And I was like, I'm so amazing at this game. They never expect anyone would get this far. And so they didn't program it properly. But you're right. I mean, you have to do it exactly right. And it's weird because it's the only one. It's literally the only occurrence of that in the entire game.
Yes. To the point where the YouTube video of someone trying to get through this is, the video is entitled Impossible Jump Stage 7. And you can watch the video is about a minute and a half long, and the person tries that jump maybe 4 or 5 times, because also in true 1980s video game fashion, if you miss this jump, you're thrown down like 2 or 3 levels and you have to backtrack back up to this jump.
Right.
And you can tell at the end of the video, they just exhale and clearly just like they angrily put the controller down and then the video stops.
Do they never make it?
No, they don't. And the only reason I was able to get past it is because like the first comment on the video is like, oh, you have to hold up as you make that jump. And then the person who made the video is commenting, like their response is like, oh my God, thank you. Thanks for sharing that tip with me. I was finally able to do it. So that's, yeah, if anyone's listening to this and you've gotten 45 minutes into the show and you're wondering about that jump, well, now you have your answer.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you'll be.
I suggest that you put in the show notes for this, like, just lead off with Black Tiger Impossible Jump Solution.
Just
your parents' basement.
Just solve that mystery. Well, Huel, did you have any other notes on this one?
Sadly, when I first started playing this, I thought he was shooting missiles, but it turns out you are throwing knives.
That would have been a much different game.
Genre, yeah, the juxtaposition did not make sense. And then maybe level two, I saw that they were knives. So
you thought it was Turok the dinosaur hunter at first, where for some reason he has like a rocket launcher.
Exploding later. Arrows and yes.
Mm-hmm. No, that would have been a different kind of game. Maybe a little more fun.
Maybe.
It is. He is using a whip in this game, correct?
Oh, it's like a chain mace.
I think it's a mace. Yeah.
Oh, a morning star, maybe something like that.
Right. I think these are called. Yeah. It's called a flail.
Flail. Yeah. Right.
That does seem kind of odd. How does he use daggers and a flail at the same time?
Well, if you want to talk,
I don't
think
you want to go down that road.
He is throwing nine daggers at a time, mm-hmm. endlessly. So that's more of a concern to me.
The more I analyze this game, the more it kind of falls apart.
Yeah, it's weird. It does not hold up.
I know. I'm not sure if I care.
To scrutiny.
I'm not sure if I care for unrealistic physics in my game.
Wonder if he accidentally throws any daggers while he's sleeping. They're just like coming out of his body.
At all times.
They're coming out of his pores.
Goes to feed his dog.
Making daggers again.
Oh, no.
A nocturnal dagger emission.
Yes. It's a common occurrence.
Well, it happened more when he was a teenager. Then he got over it. Yeah, that is... Well, also, the other thing I don't think we've mentioned is... the jumping physics for this game are all sorts of odd, kind of.
Yeah. Like, can you just talk about it for like 10 minutes?
I don't know. I have amnesia.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry about that.
Well, if you fall off a ledge, like you cannot, you just plummet straight down like a stone. You cannot like go left to right in the air. And at one point you can fall down like five ledges because of that, which is clearly an intentional part of the game. Like they clearly programmed it that way. And also just kind of the jump physics in general are somewhat odd, kind of like Super Ghouls and Ghosts, where you can only jump a certain pattern in front of you. So that also,
I like the ever present cartoonist falling sound.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Oh, even
yeah.
if you're falling like four pixels, it happens. Yeah. It's like really fast.
I like, you can tell that you're a gamer when you find it odd that you can't generate propulsion in midair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was gonna say is like, if you think about it that way, this is the most realistic jumping in any game ever.
Pretty much.
Yeah, but then the rest of the game isn't real, man.
No.
What about them daggers, Brian?
Yeah. Come on, I either want realism or I don't. This isn't Solid Snake starring in this game. Oh God.
I have one more note here. Uh-huh. I have this book, I haven't read it yet, in Ernest Cline's Ready Player One book. The protagonist has to complete a 3D simulation of Black Tiger as part of the hunt, whatever that is. I'm sure it's in the story somewhere. That book, Ready Player One, is an upcoming movie being produced and directed or something by some indie filmmaker that goes by Stefan Spielberg, something like that.
Senor Spielbergo.
Oh, that's I don't know. On one hand, that could be cool. On the other hand, I think Steven Spielberg's biggest video game acknowledgement is lending his name to E.T. for the Atari. Like part
yeah,
of
the... he came. Didn't he go by the development office and then play it and say it was the best game he ever played or something like that before it was released?
Something like that. Well, part of the reason why E.T. was such shovelware was because like he got a piece of that video game deal, and that's why they made 11 billion copies of the game that went to the landfill. So, yeah. Well, Paul, maybe you can conclude the conversation on Black Tiger for us.
With I can't think of anything more appropriate. Just that I love this game. I mean, it hits every single sweet spot for me. I mean, it was like Super Mario Brothers with bulging biceps and loincloths and swords. I mean, it was just it's an adventure. It's not hard to figure out. You don't have to read up on it to know what's going on. There's a minimal amount of storytelling, but yet there's an immersive world, and it's hard. It's crazy hard, but it's not so hard that it just makes you not ever want to play it again. And I feel like the levels are beautifully designed. Each one is wildly different than the other. You know, you'll never get bored looking at the backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And also, I didn't talk about the music, but I like the music in this game. I think it's really good, and it's really evocative. It's not necessarily medieval, but I think it works for the game. And
it's kind of jet. I like the music on the continue screen because I saw it about 50 times. It's a nice jaunty little ditty.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it does feel a little. I mean, it feels a little epic. I don't want to be. You know, I know I love this game more than anyone else, but it feels epic. I mean, that whole like. I mean, it's not your kind of typical sort of music. It's got a real. it's got a real epic feel to it, and the game's kind of dark, and there's three dragons, and there's a girl with a turban. Oh, everybody play this game.
did any of your did little Paul's Pascal's Pager play this game or see you playing it?
Yeah, actually, Liam has he's got a saved game going on, so it's making the jump, and he's into it, so we'll see. Now he's kind of obsessed with Minecraft, but he is into the game.
You trained him well. He's not.
You bet.
Well, it's not like you did beat this game, so it's not like Kid Icarus where he has to beat it to preserve your right. family legacy. But
right, you know, it's probably worth pointing out that in no small part do I love this game so much because it is the one game that I ever beat in the arcade.
True.
Powerful when I stand in front of it.
Awesome. All right. In that case, let's move on to the email portion of the show. Todd, have you gotten any emails this week?
I did get one email from my close and personal friend Butterscoot24.
Oh,
it has been a while, so mm-hmm. I'm eager to hear from him.
Yeah,
he writes, Todd, did I ever tell you what the definition of insanity is? Insanity is doing the exact same fucking thing over and over again, expecting shit to change. That is crazy. The first time somebody told me that, I don't know, I thought they were bullshitting me, so I shot him. The thing is, he was right. And then I started seeing everywhere I looked, all these fucking pricks everywhere I looked doing the exact same fucking thing over and over and over and over again, thinking, this time it's going to be different. No, 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 please. This time it's going to be different. Okay. Do you have a fucking problem in your head? Do you think I'm bullshitting you? Do you think I'm lying? Fuck you, okay? Fuck you. It's okay, man. I'm gonna chill. I'm gonna chill, hermano. I'm gonna chill. The thing is, all right, the thing is, I killed you once already. And it's not like I'm fucking crazy, okay? It's like water under the bridge. Did I ever tell you the definition of insanity? His email ends there. It seems like he was trying to ask about the difficulty level in games. Do you guys ever play any games set to insane difficulties?
Oh.
I usually play through the games once on a normal difficulty level and then kind of finish up with them. I don't set it to the insane levels that some games have.
He really took us on a journey there with that email. We really saw the darkness of the human soul.
A bleep-filled journey.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
The only games I've ever really played on like the hardest difficulty level is I played Doom for a tiny bit on one of the harder settings, like Ultraviolent. Mm-hmm. And also the Tales of series, like Tales of Graces and Tales of Zillia.
Tales of Anime.
Pretty much. Yeah, they're these super, super Japanese RPGs that come out every 1 or 2 years.
Super Japanese.
Well, there's like kind of normal Japanese RPGs like Final Fantasy, that series. Then there's the Tales series, which is like way...
You have like a little girl on your team wearing a mini skirt that hits people with a staff, right?
Yeah, and you're not talking about like a specific game. You're talking about like all of them. Like I actually just played through. I just beat Tales of Hearts, which is for the PlayStation Vita. And yes, you have a 10-year-old painter girl who is on your team. So yeah, pretty much all of those. Oh, and you also have a girl who is about 5'11" and like 5'7" of that is leg. And of course, like her skirt just barely ends past her rump. But those games have a insane difficulty level that you have to beat to get trophies. So like I've managed to beat most of them on like the hardest difficulty setting.
That is what annoys me about the insanity and hard difficulty levels. That I'm a kind of OCD gamer when it comes to achievements, getting all those chieves. And so I'll get like 99% of all the achievements on the first run through of a game on normal. Mm-hmm. And then there's going to be one achievement left over that says, okay, now beat this game on insanity difficulty level. It's like, no, I don't want to spend another 40 hours playing everything all over again just for one achievement.
You never go full Japanese.
Huel or Paul, do you like to play on the old insanity difficulty?
I don't know if anyone has picked up on this, but I do not enjoy very hard video games. They tend to just annoy me and anger me, and I don't see the fun in it.
Yeah.
So, because I like to play many different games, so if I can just beat a game and enjoy it and experience it, I'll just move on to the next one. And I feel like if you play these insanely hard games or these games on the highest level, you're investing so much time into just one game, I just don't see the appeal. Mm-hmm. And I don't see the appeal in getting beaten constantly. So no, I do not play games on the hardest difficulty. Mm-hmm.
What about you, Paul? I feel like your answer might be the opposite, given that the two games we've played at your behest so far, Kid Icarus and Black Tiger.
Those are probably the two most difficult games we've played so far.
Yeah, well, I mean, that might speak more to my OCD than my desire to play difficult games. I honestly can't think of a game that I am familiar with or that I've played that allows you to choose the hardness setting, exception of like Doom and Quake. So I played those games back in the day, and I would play those on the hardest level just because I'm kind of – I just feel like if I'm going to be good at it, I want to be good at it. Like I want to really be good at it. I don't want to be like, dude, I totally got to, you know, this whatever and have somebody ask me, oh, really? What level did you you know, I never wanted to do that. So I would play those on the hardest, but I don't know of really any other games that in my experience, allowed me to choose. I'm sure they're out there. I don't have experience with them.
It definitely is more of a modern thing where you can choose the difficulty level, whereas like most of the games from the NES era, you did not have a difficulty that you could select. It was either an easy game or it was a hard game.
I usually just play on whatever the default is, just like the normal, middle, normal, hard game. I just didn't want to give the impression that I was just turning down the difficulty. I'm just not turning it up.
I will also normally try to start out on normal and just see how far I can get. Because the other thing is, some games, if you play it on easy, they'll only let you play a stage or two and then say, oh, well, you can handle more.
Now like, try it on normal.
Yeah, Smash TV does that, where if you play it on easy, you can only play through a stage, and then it just says, play it on normal.
There's also some games, and I think one of the games, I can't remember which one it is, where that we've covered already, where if you play on normal, you'll get it ending, but if you don't get the really good ending unless you play it on hard.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some oddball games that are actually easier if you push it up to hard. The only one that I can think of off the top of my head is a game called Valkyrie Profile for the PlayStation.
Yeah, I played that one.
Yeah, where if you put it on hard, every character you get starts on level 1. But this is for the better, because otherwise you get new characters and they are leveled up stupidly by the computer. So you actually want to play it on hard. So
you're saying like they leveled up their stats all weirdly?
Yeah, pretty much. So there's actually if you play it on normal, it hurts you. And you can play the game on easy, but if you play it on easy, you cannot get the best ending. So you're pretty much recommended to play it on hard. So now, Huel, did you get any emails this week?
I did, in fact, receive one email, mm-hmm. and it is from, everyone ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Excited.
Eager and ready.
I'm turgid.
It's from ScooterBot42.
Oh,
Scooty.
So they write in, hey guys, I finally did it. I saved up enough money to get some sushi. I know it's a food that's consumed by people with class, a real status symbol. So I headed over to the local BP gas station and got their finest California roll. After being quickly escorted off the premises, I was able to enjoy this new experience. This journey of culinary discovery got me thinking, what's everyone's favorite food-related video game? Huel's number one fan, ScooterButt42.
Well, I hope his rolls came with barbecue sauce, at least.
Yeah, or at least just some sort of spicy sauce, or maybe some mustard.
I wonder if he saw a friend and guest of the show, Backsack, because Backsack is a big sushi fan. I bet they probably bumped into each other at the old gas station.
Yeah, they're probably going to the same place. I mean, it's known for their fine cuisine. So
sushi is sushi. I mean, why would you need to go to a nice restaurant for sushi? It's probably all the same.
So you get some rice and whatever's in the middle, then you're fine.
Yeah, some eels.
As long as it's not raw, I mean, you're cool.
Oh no, you don't want the raw sushi. That's
gross.
Yeah. Yeah. What was ScooterButt's question again?
Yes, everyone's favorite food-related video games.
Ah, yes, of course. Well, it's cliche, but Burger Time is kind of fun.
It's kind of fun.
It's a classic game. I don't know, the strictly kind of food fun. Related. I looked up food related games just now, and they consider Pac-Man to be a food related game because he's eating.
Interesting.
I would say out of the list that I just glanced over, Cooking Mama is actually a pretty fun little game. Mm-hmm. If you're familiar with that one. It came out of like Nintendo DS and game, or systems like
I think
that.
The Wii. It's one I'd heard of, but I've not played. Mm-hmm.
There's this series of really Japanese RPGs called Tales of Graces and Tales of you know, like Tales of Hearts, and you can cook.
I've never heard of those.
You can cook. You can cook in them between battles. They're kind of fun. I'm not making that up either. Like, you're just in the middle of these dungeons and your party's cooking food.
If you put it like that, then I would say World of Warcraft is my pick then, because you can cook your own food that you eat before you go into battle.
Oh, so good, yeah.
Or Skyrim, you can make the different recipes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm thinking about this. Can you count? Do you get to count Rampage as a food related game?
Yeah, they're eating. They're eating food. They cook them too. They Lizzie burned them up, right?
Yeah, right. That's my pick.
Very accurate. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of have to, because otherwise you have to pick a game like Burger Time or I don't even. Oh, what
that Ninja?
Yeah, Panic Restaurant, the NES game that costs like $250.
Or Diner Dash.
Yeah, Diner Dash. Or the second stage in Back to the Future for the NES where you had to throw root beers at a bunch of biffs.
Oh, God. Yeah, that game's horrible. Oh, Three Stooges, which I did play as a kid. Three Stooges has stuff like a cracker eating contest.
That's racist.
It's very racist and also not a good game. This will shock you, but a licensed game on the Three Stooges that came out in like 1990, not good.
That is odd.
Yeah.
I'm not going to claim that I knew about this beforehand, but just out of curiosity, I took a quick look, and there is a Hungry Hungry Hippos video game, and that's got to be somewhere in the top three, right?
I mean, I guess by default, yeah.
Exactly.
It's all
when you think eating games, you think Hungry Hungry Hippos. It's got the word hungry in the title.
I mean,
twice.
Who wants to go through all the trouble of setting up Hungry Hungry Hippos in your house when you could play it on video game form?
Right, exactly.
Oh my God, that doesn't even
so much time.
That is even. Yeah, there are weird video game adaptions. It's like, why would anyone want this? I can see why people would want to play Monopoly or Risk in a video game form, because those games are kind of a pain in the ass to set up.
It's just time consuming.
Yeah, not so much Hungry Hungry Hippos.
I've had some hours long games of Hungry Hungry Hippos. I don't know about you.
I mean, why not Crossfire, the video game, or something like that?
Crossfire!
I don't know that I've ever played a game of Hungry Hungry Hippos that reached conclusion.
Yeah, see? It just takes forever.
It was always just madness, marbles everywhere, and then at some point somebody walks away.
Well, I received one email this week. Dear guys, last week it was the 30th birthday for Super Mario. However, who's better, Luigi or Wario? Sincerely, Jan Brady.
Interesting.
I would say Wario is better.
Absolutely.
At his skills are better than Luigi. Luigi's just like Mario's sidekick, right?
He's just Green Mario.
Green Mario. He's Green Mario.
Mario.
What if Mario? Wario, that guy can take on both Mario and Green Mario.
Definitely. Whenever there is a Mario game where you can select a character, I go right to Wario. That is my go-to Mario Kart, my go-to golf. I am a Wario fan because he is large and annoying, and it is fantastic.
He has a sexy mustache.
Yes.
He has a geometric mustache. You know, I will give you guys a little piece of Pascal trivia here. Back in the day, I used to play Super Mario Brothers on two-player and murder Mario instantly so that I could play Luigi. Luigi was my go-to guy, and it only intensified when it got to Super Mario 2 because he had the crazy legs that would,
the jumping.
Yeah. He had the super jumping. It wasn't floating like Princess Peach, which is of course cheating. It was just the super crazy jumping with the wildly waggling legs. So I'm a Luigi guy, and I'll I'll be straight. I sort of tapped out of the Mario universe before Wario showed up. So I don't have any experience with him, but I feel like my allegiance would remain with Luigi no matter what.
Mm. Well, I don't know if you've heard this before, but Super Mario Brothers 2 is based on Doki Doki Panic.
Uh-huh.
What? Doki what?
Yeah. I know, guys. I know.
The world is crumbling.
So, you know, on a serious note, isn't it weird how Doki Doki Panic set the standard for how we perceive Mario and his entire kingdom, right? Yeah, Mario's just the dude. Luigi is tall and gawky. And the princess toots a lot and can fly.
Yeah. Toad's annoying and no one likes him.
Yeah.
Well, also, no one ever plays Toad, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, to me, Luigi is kind of whipped. Like, ever since the, I think it's N64, that's the game he's cut out of completely.
Oh, yeah.
And then from then on...
Well, they give him his own games after that.
Yeah, but they're weird games. Like, nobody...
Took till the GameCube.
Like, they're not of equal stature to the Mario games. Like, Mario has, like, actual real games, like Super Mario Sunshine and that kind of stuff. Whereas Luigi is stuck in stuff like Mario is Missing.
Hmm.
And what is it? Luigi's Mansion? Haunted Mansion? Something like that? Yeah, come on. Those are games for kids, not serious people.
As someone who has no idea what you're talking about, it sounds insanely ridiculous that you just referenced Super Mario Sunshine as something awesome and Super Mario Secret or whatever you just called it as something ridiculous.
Yeah.
Rose Mario Galaxy.
Yeah, but there is a game called Mario Sunshine, isn't there? Or am I thinking
of Galaxy? Yes, Super Mario Sunshine for the GameCube.
Okay.
I saw Super Mario Maker tonight when I was at Best Buy, and I was walking. I never heard of it. I just looked at it, and I thought, Super Mario Maker, like, this is an effing game. Like, this is a game about getting it on Mario's mom and dad.
Oh, man. Oh.
They've run out of ideas at this point, and it's porn. It's Mario porn.
Well, you're not wrong about them running out of ideas, because Super Mario Maker is basically just it's kind of like a Mario level editor kind of thing.
It's Minecraft Mario.
Yeah, Minecraft or Little Big World, where it's basically like it's a level maker and you can upload the levels for other people to play.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and I don't know, Nintendo has really been pushing it, because I get email alerts on Nintendo stuff and for you know, for the news posts I do, and like they've had like Miyamoto out doing interviews for this, and
yeah, it's big on Twitch right now.
Yeah, and I don't know, I think it might be a generational thing. I've never gotten into Minecraft, and I'm only a little into things like SimCity, where you build your own city and there's no real goal. Like I kind of want goals for my.
I think I'm just a not creative person, because all those level editors and stuff like that just never appeal to me. Why do I want to do all the work?
Oh, same thing.
Just let me play it. You know.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to challenge your friends, guys. You make a difficult level and you send it to them and you challenge them, see if they can beat it.
Well, Nintendo's just like, we're bored. You do it.
Yeah, how about for my $50, I buy Tecmo Bowl and challenge my friend in that.
You know what, though? I think that's a super – I feel like that's a modern thing. I was talking to my kids not too long ago about how most of their games don't involve villains. All the games that they play, I feel like if you're not trying to kill someone, you're not really playing a video game. They're doing The Sims and the Minecraft and all of these things where I'm like, well, who do you have to murder? And the answer is nobody.
Just get a box of crayons or something.
Yeah.
Right. Like, let's play Pet Store. Really? That's not a video game.
You're the opposite. Why are you playing Mortal Kombat? Oh, I have to kill someone. I want to see you ripping out some hearts.
That's exactly right. Where's the fatal move?
Yeah. Right. I don't I don't want to see you building up your pet store. Well, on that note, I think we gotta wrap up here. We're going pretty long tonight, guys. So, Mr. Brisket, do you have any final thoughts here?
Yeah. Please accept some Zinni coins.
Huel, your closing remarks.
That's it. That's it for me.
Okay, then. I'd like to thank our guest again this week, Paul. And again, Paul is one of the co-hosts, along with a friend of the show, Neil T, of AfterPod, which is available at www.afterpod.net. It is a daily podcast show about the Adam Carolla Show and some other fine podcasts. Definitely give it a listen if you like Paul's appearance here. Paul, any final thoughts here?
Yes, thank you for the plug and congratulations on your bravery.
All right. On that note, it is time for the snifferoo of next week's game. And go.